Okay, we're on page 816, all the way on top of the page. The story we learned, we didn't have a class last week. So 2 weeks ago we were learning that this guy that was chopping wood on Shabbos, you know, the Mekesh Shetim, who according to many opinions was Tzalof Chod. So it says like this, V'yubanei Yisrael b'amidbar, the Jews were in the desert, V'yimtzu, and they found Ish Mekesh Shetim b'yim HaShabbos. He was chopping wood, or gathering wood. There's three opinions what he was doing. One opinion says he was chopping wood, which is biblically forbidden. Another opinion says he was gathering wood on Shabbos, which is biblically forbidden. Other opinions say he was carrying the wood on Shabbos. So the bottom line, whatever it is, he was actually desecrating Shabbos. Now, the one that did this, like we said, was Tzalof Chod. In fact, the commentaries explain, it says in the Pasuk, Vayu b'nei Yisrael b'amidbar. The Jews were in the desert. Okay? Everybody knows they're in the desert. Why is the Torah telling me the Jews were in the desert if everybody knows the Jews were in the desert? So the answer is, this is one of the reasons that they said that guy was carrying. Because the desert where the Jews were, because there were 600,000 Jews there, was the public domain. Rishus Rabbim. And therefore he was carrying in Rishus Rabbim. And he ended up doing this. Now, there's different opinions. When did the story happen? The first year the Jews left Egypt, or the second year? One opinion says the first year the Jews went out of Egypt, the second Shabbos, already they desecrated it. Which is, Rashi says, this is very negative about the Jewish people to say that they only kept one Shabbos, and the second Shabbos they already desecrated it. Other commentaries learn, no, that it was actually the second year. So it didn't happen as soon as the Jews came out of Egypt. It was the second year.
What? So they took they kept one Shabbos complete?
According to one opinion, that this happened the second Shabbos of the desert. Yeah? The Jews only kept one Shabbos properly, and the second Shabbos, they already desecrated it. But we'll soon see. When we finish the story, we'll see the story is not as simple as it looks. I'm going to finish the pasuk, and then, I mean, a few psukim, and then we're going to discuss this whole story. Those that found him gathering wood brought him to Moshe and Aaron, to the whole community. They put him in prison. They didn't know what to do with him. And as Rashi says like this, the Torah says, one who desecrates Shabbos gets capital punishment. Gets death. Most humas. But they did know there's four types of capital punishment. There's stoning, there's burning, there's sword, and there's choking. So all the Torah knew was, it says, mechalaleha most humas. That they knew. Because it says earlier in the Chumash. What the people didn't know is what type of death punishment to give him. Because all the Torah says is most humans you kill him. He didn't know. Again, there's a lot to discuss here. We're just going to read the psukim because we need to get the whole picture. The man should die. The whole camp should stone him outside of the camp. The whole community took him outside of the camp. They stoned him with stones and he died. Okay? So number one, the stoning process is not like you would think it is, that a guy stands against the wall and everybody throws stones at him. That's not the way it worked. Okay? The way it worked is, like it says in the Pasuk, Mechutz Lamachna. There was a stoning place outside of the camp. It was actually a tower that was two stories high, two floors high. The guy that needed to get stoned, he went up with the two witnesses to this tower, and the two witnesses, because it says, Yad ha'edim tihi yabo barishon el amisei, the Torah says the witnesses should be the first ones to kill him. So what the witnesses would do is, they would push the guy off this two-story building. Most of the time, that's the way he died. If he still didn't die, the Mishnah in Sanhedrin says, they took up a very big boulder, a big rock, the two people, the two witnesses needed to carry, and they would put it on his body, and that would kill him. If he still didn't die, then the people throw stones at him. But that's the process of actually stoning the person. Okay, it actually, because the pasuk says by Matan Torah, "Sokel ye sokel, or yoda ye yoda," either stone him or push him off. So this is what the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, the way they would do these types of things.
Did he know that he was desecrating Shabbos, or did he do it by purpose?
We'll see in a second. That's what we're going to discuss. Now, the Daskin Balatais says over here that if the Jews would have kept two Shabbosim in a row, no nation would have been able to ever hurt them. They never did, so therefore the nations have the jurisdiction over, and therefore it's this famous Gemara that says, if the Jews will keep one Shabbos, and the Yerushalmi says two Shabbosim, Mashiach would come. If all the Jews in the world would keep Shabbos properly, Mashiach would come. Based on this. Okay. Now, the Orachaim HaKadosh, there's a lot of discussion in this. I'm just trying to think what thing to say first. The Mekayesh Sheitzim, who was Salafchad, according to many opinions, was really a very big tzaddik. Okay, it was a tzaddik. His daughters were the ones that came and said, you know, we want to share in Israel and give us an inheritance. And, you know, as Rashi says, they were all holy women. So the father, Tzolofcha, was definitely a tzaddik. What happened was, Tzolofcha wanted to show the Jewish people that God meant business. Okay? And this is, as the Mefarshim point out, this was right after the story of the Meraglim. And the Jews thought, okay, maybe now that we're not going into Eretz Yisrael right away, maybe some of the mitzvahs are lost. Tzolofchad wanted to prove a point to the Jewish people that God means business. Okay? He desecrated Shabbos for one purpose and one purpose only, to get killed, that the Jewish people should see that Hashem means it. So he didn't do it because he wanted to desecrate Shabbos. He did it because he was a tzaddik. He had mesiras nefesh. If you think about it, he had mesiras nefesh. Literally, he gave up his life for the sanctification of Hashem's name, that people should see that Hashem really means business. In fact, there's a very interesting mashal in the Gemara, and this Gemara in Sanhedrin, so the mashal that the commentaries bring down, asks a very simple question. There's a din in Shabbos. We learned it in the Gemara. Malacha shein atzricha lagufa. That means, if you do a job on Shabbos, not for the real purpose it was done, to argue between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, if you chayv a potter, the halacha is, except the Rambam, but most commentaries, most codifiers paskin, that you're not chayv. Meaning, in order for malacha on Shabbos to be a real desecration that you get killed, capital punishment, it has to be done for the purpose of why the malacha is normally done. And I'll give you a simple example that the Gemara gives. Normally, carrying, you want to, Shabbos you can't carry, right? From a private to public to private, you can't carry. Unless there's an eidiv. But if there's no eidiv, you can't carry. Now, normally, if I want to carry this chumash to the street, yeah? What is the purpose of carrying the chumash? Because I want the chumash there. That's normally the purpose of why you carry. Why do I carry something from shul to my house? I want it in the house, or I want it in the street, and that's why I carry it. Right? So what is the purpose of carrying? Because I want the object in the place where I'm taking it to. That's the concept of carrying, correct? So the Gemara says, I'll give you an exception to this rule. What happens, God forbid, the Gemara gives an example, there's a dead body in a house. Okay? And I don't want it in the house. So I take it into the street. That is a different purpose that is a different purpose than the real purpose of caring. Caring is because I want the object in the street. It's not that I want the dead body in the street. I don't want the dead body here. That's not the normal purpose of caring. Understand? So that is what's called malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. It's not made for the ultimate purpose of why you did the malacha. Okay? So the Masha and the Gemara asked the question, if Tzlavcha did this to prove a point, normally if you chop wood, or gather wood, or carry the wood, what's the purpose? Because I want it here, I want it chopped. But here, he didn't do it for that purpose. Why did he do it? For a different purpose completely. To show that God meant business, that if you desecrate Shabbos, you're going to get killed. Right? He didn't do it for the normal purpose of the malacha that he did. So the Masha asks, the famous Masha, so why was Tzlavcha chayev misa? Why did he get capital punishment? He didn't cut the wood and move the wood or whatever he did for the normal way of doing it. So halachically, he shouldn't be get that sentence. Okay? So the Masha answers that courts don't know what your intent is. Only God knows what your intent is. They didn't know, and the court, there's no way the court can know what Tzlavcha's intention was. He did it because he did it, and that's what they saw, so they killed him anyway. That was how they answered the question, why should he get Misa if it was not really the proper way of doing Amalach? And they said, Bezdin, as far as Bezdin was concerned, one second, he did it the proper way of doing the Amalach, because they couldn't know what his ultimate intent was. Hashem knew that his intent was to prove a point that Hashem means business, and the person who desecrates Shabbos is going to get killed. But otherwise, it's a whole different story.
Is that why they had to ask Hashem?
Yeah. No, they had to ask Hashem because they didn't know what death to give him.
But if Hashem is the only one who knew what his intent was, is that why they had also why they had to ask Hashem? Whether he should get killed or not, based on that?
No, because as far as Hashem was concerned, Hashem knew the intention, but Hashem said, in this case, you have to give him, because Bezdin doesn't know if he did tshuva, or Bezdin doesn't know what he's thinking. So therefore, Bezdin can only go by what they see.
But that's what I'm saying. What if he did do tshuva inside? But
when court kills you, the tshuva doesn't help. What?
So, Rabbi, if they're only allowed to judge based on what they see, the action itself, then where does the concept of judging favorably come in?
Judging favorably is not...
You are supposed to judge favorably, so wouldn't you like ask somebody, what was your intention? Why did you do that?
No. Because Bezdin, we learned this many times, Bezdin can only go by what they see. Tshuva doesn't help when courts kill you. Right? Remember we learned that? Only when Hashem kills you, tshuva is valid because Hashem knows what's really going on in your heart, if you're sorry or not. The courts don't know what's going on in your heart, and therefore the courts, tshuva doesn't help when Bezdin kills you. And the same thing the Marsha explains, because this is his intent in it, Bezdin doesn't know what your intent is.
And they can't
you can't judge favorably when it comes to court.
They can't even go
no.
Saying, what was your intention?
You can't.
What's the point of witnesses, though?
Hmm?
What's the point of witnesses in the whole court case?
To make sure that you did it intentionally.
But we don't know his intent.
Yeah, but if Bezdin warns you, you're not allowed to do it. You can't say, I didn't know. The warning of witnesses, in the Gemara says, is lahavchem ben shegel b'mezid, to know the difference between whether... If a guy desecrates Shabbos, yeah, and he wasn't warned, the guy could always come to Bezdin and say, I didn't know. Right? So what do witnesses do by warning him? They say, you're not allowed to do it. He can't say, I didn't know you're not allowed to do it. You were just told you're not allowed to do it. And what the punishment is. That's the purpose of witnesses' warning. Okay, there's two issues. There's the witnesses verifying that he did it. Okay? And there's another part concept of the witnesses that the person knew that he wasn't allowed to do it. Well, what did you want?
Why did Hashem say to Moses, then the man should be put to death?
Again, because the court, when it comes to the courts, he can't do that.
He said to Moses,
yeah, Hashem said to Moshe, kill him. Because the courts have to kill him. The only question is, what death to kill him? The court knew they had to kill him. Because they didn't know what his intent was, and there's no halachic way of knowing what his intent is.
What was his motivation?
His motivation, according to some opinions, was that, again, that Hashem, people should be afraid to desecrate Shabbos because Hashem really means it.
So, thereafter, Jews kept Shabbos properly?
Yeah, they were much more scared than they were before.
Was the only stone you count?
No, there was another guy that cursed. Hashem was also stoned.
So they kept Shabbos the rest of the 39 years?
Well, more or less, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Okay, now, there's also the Mefarshim ask, in this parsha, we dealt with the spies. Then it went to people that worshipped idols, that we learned the last few weeks. Remember the Korbanos? And then it comes to Tzolofchad. What's the connection between the three cases? It goes from spies to idol worshipping to the guy desecrating Shabbos. What's the connection? So it's like this. All three cases show the importance of deed over thought and speech. Okay, idol worshipping, okay, even though the din is you can't bow down to an idol even if you don't believe in it. Okay, idol worshipping, the halacha is, if somebody says bow down to an idol, right, you don't have to believe in it. You can think at the time, I don't believe in it, you're worthless, you're a piece of hunk of stone, you know, nothing. He still gets killed for idol worshipping. So it doesn't matter what you thought, it matters what you did. Okay? The wood gatherer, again, it's totally irrelevant what he thought. He thought, I'm doing it to prove a point. But the bottom line is, he did an act. That's what matters. What's the concept of the spies? They didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael because then they would have to start doing mitzvahs, which would take away time from learning. So all these three things show the importance of action over speech and thought. Mekosh Shetim, even though, if you look at the intent of his, he shouldn't have gotten killed, but his action demanded that he gets killed. Idol worshipping, you get killed even if you don't believe in it. But if you bow down to an idol, you get killed. And the same thing, the spies. They didn't want to go on Torah so because they didn't want to do action. They wanted to stay in the Midbar and learn Torah in thought and speech and not do the practical action mitzvahs. This is the connection.
Well, he did this maybe because he saw that the emunah of some people are not strong, to show them a point.
He saw, like, he brings down the memory. It's really Gemara. He saw the Yidden were lazy when it came to Mitzvah Shabbos. And they were very lacking in the observance of Shabbos. There's a din, I know it was mentioned Sunday morning, but it's a famous din in Halacha, that when Bezdin sees that there is a lack or an epidemic of sin, or lack of something, that the Jews are not doing what they could, they're allowed to punish you more than the Torah says you could be punished. Like, for instance, for stealing, you don't get death. You don't get killed unless you kidnap and sell it. Then, but I'm saying, stealing, you don't get killed, right? But the Gemara says in Sfaradan Shulchan Aruch, if Beis Din sees there's an epidemic of stealing, it's out of hand. Beis Din is given the authority by the Torah to say the next person that steals is going to get killed, and they could kill him. Beis Din has that ability to do that.
They have that here now too.
No,
but yeah, it's called martial law. Or something.
Oh yeah, martial law. But I'm saying it's not Beis Din. Beis Din doesn't have to say martial law. Yeah, the government has what's called martial law. You're right, but
why is it that for an avera? It's just the action. Let's say a person wants to do a mitzvah, and all he does is think about it.
He doesn't get mitzvah.
Is it like...
No. It doesn't go like that. I want to think to give a lot of tzedakah. I want to think to learn a lot of Torah, but I'm going to play cards instead. It doesn't
work. No, but it doesn't say if you have the intention to do it sometimes.
Machshava teva kodesh baruch hu does not mean that machshava is like an action. It doesn't mean that. If I think of putting on tefillin but I sleep in bed, it's not considered putting on tefillin. Or keeping Shabbos or learning or davening or whatever it may be.
It feels like it sometimes.
Yeah. Staying in bed feels like it.
Rabbi,
yeah.
If a person doesn't know, they search within their heart, they're like, you know, I can't find it, but they try to find out what they're supposed to do, but whatever, the simple question is, what if the person doesn't know? Does he still get punished?
For accidental sacrifice, he has to bring a sacrifice. He doesn't get killed. He doesn't get lashes, but he has to bring many sins. If you did it accidentally, you have to bring a carbon. Like if somebody desecrated Shabbos, they didn't know that you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos, but they did it. So the time of the Beis Hamikdash, they would have to bring a sacrifice.
And all
these
days?
Huh?
In
these days? Tshuva. When Mashiach comes, everybody that desecrated Shabbos during the time of Golos is going to stand in line. The lines are going to be around the world. Lines for the bring of Korban Chatos. That's what it says in Halacha.
Who eats from this korban?
Well, you're hungry already. The sin offering, the owner doesn't eat. Only the Kayanim and the Mizbech. Okay, normally, it's interesting. Normally, it says over here they put him into prison to see, you know, what the punishment is. Again, in Torah law, there is no concept of prison as a punishment. Okay? In Torah law, there is no, like, you have in the secular world, you have, okay, 10 years life, 5 years, 3 years. There is no such thing as jail time in Torah as a punishment. There is a concept like we find over here. They didn't know what punishment to give him, so they kept him locked up until they were told what punishment to give him. Okay, but there is no punishment known as jail term in Yiddishkeit, in Torah. Huh? City of refuge is not jail. The guy lived a normal life. He was productive. He brings his family. His rabbi has to go with him to teach him Torah. The only thing is, he was bound to live in a certain city. It's not jail.
Witness relocation.
Yeah, but it's the Rebbe once explained this. It's already printed. He said because according to Torah, a person needs to live a constructive life. To live a life in a jail, which is completely non-constructive, now that most of the time you become worse, it would become even worse. The Rebbe spoke already many times that it should be, instead of jail time, there should be rehabilitation to get people back into the world to be successful, constructive work, to get them back into the normal civilized world. Obviously, after they're cured from whatever their illness is of doing. But Torah says, if a person did certain crimes that were so severe, the person lost his right to continue a constructive life. So you kill him. And even the Torah, it's very interesting. Here they have what's called death row. Yeah? By the time they sentence you to death, until you get killed, could take maybe 10 years, 15 years until this appeal and that appeal and this and then the governor, the president, and you know, it could take years. In Torah law, the sentence was proclaimed in the morning. That day, the person got killed. The din was, he had to be killed. When Beis Din ruled killed, to kill him, he had to get killed that day, the Mishnah says. But you say, yeah, it had to be that day. You're not allowed to leave to the next day. And that's why it says, Beis Din, when it came to capital punishment, after they deliberated, you know, and everything, they never gave the ruling at night or late in the afternoon when it was impossible to kill him. They would give it in the morning, and that day right away the guy went out to get killed. Because it's torture for a person to be on death row, to know I'm getting killed, and therefore my life is over, and like what type of constructive life can you live? If a person did a crime that's so severe and so terrible, the Torah says, then you need to get killed. Other times you need to get cleansed by lashes, by whipping. But the concept of jail time as a punishment doesn't exist in Torah because it's basically not allowing the person to live a normal, constructive life. And therefore it's forbidden. What?
By lashes, it says that if the guy administering the lashes, he gets too many, and he kills the guy.
So that's, then he gets killed.
He gets killed. I understand, by the same...
No, he has to run city refuge. You do it accidentally, yeah.
Okay. But then, by the same token, I mean, just to kill a guy like that desecrates Shabbat, I mean, I don't understand. It doesn't make sense.
1 minute. That's dealing with God over here, in case you didn't know. Hashem says, this person did this crime, he needs to be killed. When Beis Din kills him, is Beis Din called a murderer?
No.
Because they're doing exactly what Hashem said, to close the door. Oh no, I'm sorry. I thought you were closing the door. Well, I didn't say anything. It's done. Hashem said to kill him, even Lahavdol in the secular system, when the guy puts the guy to death with lethal death, right? You don't call this guy a murderer. He's doing what the courts told him to do. Here Hashem said, give the guy X amount of lashes, which the doctors have to estimate, evaluate how much he's able to handle. If the guy went above and beyond what the Beis Din said to give him, then he did a crime.
But it seems like by the lashes, it's more like
Rahman
or something.
No, yeah, because he didn't forfeit his life. He didn't forfeit his life. Okay.
If Shabbos was made for life, then why would Hashem kill someone?
Because Shabbos, desecration of Shabbos, basically is the denial of God's running the world. Creating the world.
Oh, so it's more. So Shabbos is more important than your own life, than your own soul. So mitzvahs are more important than your own soul.
No, if somebody says desecrate Shabbos or else I'll kill you, what are you supposed to do?
You're supposed to desecrate
Shabbos because you were forced. But when you willingly desecrate Shabbos, then you forfeit your life. Because the guy is warned. Don't forget, the guy is warned. Right before the act, it has to be what's called Teich Kedei Dibur. Meaning, you have to warn the guy within the amount of time it takes to say three words. Shalom Alecha Rebbe. That's what's called Teich Kedei Dibur. The warning of Beis Din has to come within, how long does it say? Shalom Alecha Rebbe. 2 seconds, 3 seconds. Yeah? It has to come within that time. If you warn the guy and 5 minutes later he did the crime, he doesn't get killed. You know why? Torah says he probably forgot what happened. See, Torah had teenagers. They know that they forget. What they don't want to remember, they forget.
So if he's such a tzaddik, why he would go and desecrate Shabbos?
Mesiras nefesh, for the sake of Hashem. Was it wrong what he did? The Torah says, ki bechet oimes. The Tzlavcha's daughter said he didn't die with a meraglim. He was from his own sin. If somebody asks a shayla, okay, if you come to a Beis Din or to a Rav, and say, listen, am I allowed to sin to prove a point? The answer is no. He did it. He didn't ask.
He took the law.
He didn't take the law into his own hands. He didn't punish somebody else. He didn't do it to somebody else. He did an act that he felt would bring out the greatness of Hashem and the greatness of Torah and how the Jews need to observe it.
So it's like the two sons of Aaron.
Huh?
It's the same thing as the two sons of Aaron.
Yeah, but, yeah. That's an idea. Again, if you're asking from a halachic perspective, was he right or wrong? It was wrong.
So
let me ask another question. If somebody comes over to you and says, desecrate Shabbos, or else I'll kill you, what are you supposed to do?
Desecrate Shabbos,
correct?
But should you kill him first if you have the option? and it's...
Yeah, somebody wants to kill you, kill him first. Now, what happens, though, if the guy said, you know what, kill me, I don't want to desecrate Shabbos?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Is he right or not?
No, he's not right. He's just
right. Is he holy or not?
Yes.
Did he die al Kiddush Hashem?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
No.
So then the Torah, you can't do it. No, I don't think so. You're doing a disservice.
So, Baruch Hashem, at least there's an argument in Halacha, so when whoever what you say, you're right. There's a famous argument between the Rambam and everybody else. According to the Rambam, a guy's not allowed to kill himself, and if he did, he's called Ma'abed Atzmei Ladas. He's called committing suicide. Okay? Most Paskim, and this is the way it's Paskim in the Shulchan Aruch, that even though if you ask a Shaila, what am I supposed to do? Halacha would adamantly say, desecrate Shabbos and don't get killed. Right? But if you, the person, I don't want to say you, if the person said, kill me, and he got killed, even though Torah says you're not allowed to do what you did. Correct? According to most of the Rishonim, he's called a holy Jew.
Because he showed to everybody that.
But was he allowed to do what he did? No. If he asked the Shaila, what does the Torah want me to do? Well, does the Torah want me to get killed, or does the Torah want me to desecrate Shabbos? What does Torah want you to do? Desecrate Shabbos. That's what Torah says you should do. But here the guy is going, so to speak, beyond the letter of the law.
Rabbeinu, so he probably saw something in his camp that people were doing.
That's what he said. He saw people were not treating Shabbos properly. So he said, okay, I want to prove the point.
Yeah, but actually, maybe you're right, because if the guy desecrates Shabbos, maybe in the next time the guy's going to ask him, okay, now you got to... kill your family, give me your family,
No, that's for murder, you have to get killed.
What do you mean? If one time you ask the guy, okay, you're
going to... Every, the sins are different. For idolatry, adultery, and murder, you have to get killed rather than kill or desecrate them. Okay, that's the story of the Mekai Shishetim. So, they killed them, and they did their thing, and... Okay, now we're going into the famous parsha called Tzitzis. B'er Hashem Amesh Shalemer, as we say in davening three times a day, Daber Ol B'nai Yisrael, well, more than three times a day, really, sometimes. Daber Ol B'nai Yisrael, speak to the Jews, V'amar to Aleihem, and tell them like this. V'asu Lohem Tzitzis, they should make for themselves Tzitzis, Al Kamfei V'gdeihem L'dereisim, on the corners of the garments, throughout all generations, meaning it's not only a mitzvah to connect to Eretz Yisrael that applies only in Israel. Al tzitzis, and they should put the tzitzis al konef sil tchelis on each corner, a thread of the tchelis, which is in English translated as turquoise or purple or whatever it is, meaning like this. Well, by the way, where does this name tzitzis come from? Okay. Tzitzis means, it's interesting, they define it in the Mefarshim a different way where it comes from. Okay. One is, Rashi says it comes from the word threads, because there's a pasuk that says tzitzis reishi, which means the hair on my head. Tzitzis reishi, which is a pasuk in Yecheskel, that it means the hair of my head. So Rashi says the word tzitzis is like hair, because what a tzitzis, like hair, is coming down from the garment. Another interpretation of tzitzis is because meitzitz min acharakim, we said in Kiddush Levana, hitzitz means to look. Okay? It means tzitzis is similar to when you see it. Because what is the mitzvah? Or the isa meisik, to see the tzitzis. Which, by the way, the Korites, who did not believe in the oral tradition, did not wear tzitzis. Because nowhere does the pasuk over here say about what you wear. The Torah says when you have a four-cornered garment, put tzitzis on the corner, or the isa meisa, and see it. So the Korites, it says, would hang them up on the wall, and they would look at it. That's the literal meaning of the pasuk. It doesn't say wearing the garment. It says when you have a corner garment, you need to put tzitzis on the corners, together with the tchelis that we'll soon discuss. And that's it. So it's how you take the literal without Torah Shebal Peh, without the oral tradition. It means that you put it on the wall. That's what they used to do.
That's okay to do now also, right? If you want to.
No. Yeah, but you don't get a mitzvah tzitzis like that.
I know you don't get the mitzvah, but is there anything positive in it that you know about?
There's nothing positive in hanging tzitzis on the wall. Nothing. Now, the Torah says, and here I just want to discuss this very interesting concept. It's a mistake that people make. There is no, and wait until I finish before you get to any conclusions on your own. There is no biblical mitzvah to wear tzitzis. There's not even a rabbinic mitzvah to wear tzitzis. Okay? The Torah says, if you have a four-cornered garment, you need to put tzitzis on them. There is no obligation to go buy a four-cornered garment that you need to wear tzitzis. And that's like we learned. There are many mitzvahs Hashem commanded you must do. You have to put on tefillin every day, right? You have to learn Torah every day. You have to, you know, the mitzvahs that the Torah says to, you have to bench lulav and esrog. There are certain mitzvahs the Torah gives us, you don't have to do them. For instance, there's a mitzvah called mezuzah, right? You have to put a mezuzah on your door. And what happens if you want to live in the street? There is no halachic obligation that you must buy a house or rent a house to be able to put up a mezuzah. You want to be homeless? There's no obligation that you must buy a house. Or, for instance, one of the mitzvahs in the Torah is shechita. Yeah? There's no mitzvah in the Torah that you have to shecht an animal to eat meat. The Torah says, you want to eat meat? You have to shecht the animal. You don't want to eat meat? You don't have to. You want to be vegetarian? You don't have to shecht. Believe it or not, one of the mitzvahs in the Torah is to give a get to your wife. There's no mitzvah in the Torah you have to divorce your wife. Well, what's the mitzvah? If, God forbid, you're breaking up. So then the way to do it is through a get. But there's no mitzvah in the Torah to give a get. There's no mitzvah in the Torah to do shechita. There's no mitzvah in the Torah to do mezuzah. The same thing. There is no mitzvah in the Torah, biblical mitzvah, that you need to wear tzitzis. All the Torah says is, if you have a four-cornered garment, you need to put tzitzis on it. There is not even a rabbinic mitzvah. There is not even a rabbinic mitzvah that you must wear tzitzis. But, the Gemara says, Shulchan Aruch says, because of the importance of the mitzvah of tzitzis, reminds us of all the mitzvahs of the Torah, and we're going to discuss it, because it reminds us of all the mitzvahs of the Torah, the Chachamim said, it's a proper thing to do, and you should do it, and you should wear it, and you should have it. And why? Because it's a very important mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that includes within all 613 mitzvahs. But just for the clarification, there's no mitzvah. And by the way, this is an interesting thing. This answers a question that some people might have. Women. And there's also different Sephardic and Ashkenazic. If you follow the Rambam's opinion and the Beis Yosef's opinion, or if you or the Ramos' opinion with the other opinions, and that is as follows: is a woman allowed to do a mitzvah that she's not obligated in? For instance, a woman is not obligated in the mitzvah of lulav. It's connected to time. A woman is not obligated to sit in a sukkah. A woman is not obligated in the mitzvah of tzitzis. Right? Because tzitzis, like it says see it, which means tzitzis is only during the day. At night there's no mitzvah of tzitzis. And again, we're not done yet, I don't even know if we're going to get there today, but it's not so simple. Technically, night is not the time of tzitzis. So therefore, day is, night isn't. So therefore, it's a mitzvah connected to time. Any mitzvah connected to time, women don't do. Okay?
Don't have to do.
Correct. No, don't have to do.
That's what I'm saying. It's a difference.
Yet, right. Yet, we find that a lot of mitzvahs connected in time, women do do. Women bench lulav. Okay, I don't know. Svardim, the Rambam says they cannot make a bracha, but many women, even today, Svardik women, I was told many of them do make brachas. Some of them don't do the lulav, some do. But you find in a lot of places, women will do lulav, women will do sukkah, women will do a lot of mitzvahs that they're not obligated to do, but they'll do them anyway. But we find two things, tefillin and tzitzis they don't do. Even the most religious women that bench lulav and sit in the sukkah and do all that other stuff, tefillin and tzitzis they won't do. Daughter of the Rashi, when we become Rashi's daughters, you can wear them too. You know what I tell all the women that come to me and they say they want to wear tefillin? And they say Rashi's daughters? I make a deal with them. I see, if you keep... No, a very simple deal. Not Rashi's daughters, they're too high. I make them a very simple deal. If you keep all the mitzvahs that you need to keep, and you still want to put on tefillin, then you could do it. They don't keep any of the mitzvahs. They want to put on tefillin, not because they want the mitzvah to, because Shabbos they don't keep, and kosher they don't keep, they just want to put on tefillin. Okay. So, but we find tefillin and tzitzis women don't do. No matter how, I don't use the word frum, because a lot of frum women don't do it, but saying a lot of, even though they'll do all the other mitzvahs that they don't need to do, they'll do this, but tzitzis and tefillin they don't do. So the answer is, it's interesting, there are certain rishonim that write that tefillin and tzitzis women are not allowed to do. Why? Because the fact that women are not obligated in tzitzis makes tzitzis a man's garment. And therefore women are not allowed to wear men's garments. They still bashgever. And many poskim write the same thing as with tefillin. Because men are obligated in tefillin, women aren't. So tefillin therefore becomes a man's, you wear tefillin, it's a garment. So therefore women are not allowed to wear men's garments. But there's, by tzitzis, there's another answer we brought down in Allah also. And that is because women do mitzvahs that men are obligated to do. But a mitzvah that even a man doesn't have to do, if a woman does it, it's called show off. Mechzi ki yahira, in the halachic expression, it looks like a show off. Now what was your burning question? Yeah.
Synthesis is not the actual garment, it's what hangs from the corners.
The tzitzis are the...
And so if you're wearing anything else that would have literally four corners, you should also have the strings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are show off mitzvahs?
For instance...
Is that why some of the...
Next time you go to shul on Shabbos, listen to me, next time you go to shul on Shabbos, if there's men in the show that wear the kapotes, the long ones, okay. If you look in the back it's split all the way up. Not torn, it's... Okay. One of those corners are rounded. Because if it would be flat, a kapote would be a four-cornered garment that would need tzitzis. But because one of the corners are rounded... It's not a four-cornered garment, and that's why if you look at all the kapotas which are made, with the split, you know, the ones that we wear, like, with the split up, it's rounded on, and it's done on the inside one that you don't see it.
So do men in the manner of speaking have it, to be careful? In
the technically.
Of the types of shirts that they buy that they aren't, like...
Yeah, technically a man would have to be careful, like, and there's certain sweaters. It's a whole discussion in halacha. Okay. There's certain sweaters. There was a style at one time. It's a zipper from the top to the bottom. Okay? Mm-hmm. And when you unzipper it, there's two corners on top and two corners at the bottom. Do you know what I'm talking about? Those zippers that zip all the way up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
If you look at them, there's really four corners. And there was a whole discussion in the contemporary poskim at that time about is there an obligation of wearing tzitzis or not. I'll tell you another secret. Do you sleep with a blanket?
Mm-hmm.
Most people do. Are you aware that a blanket is four corners?
Of course.
Yeah. Why don't you need tzitzis on a blanket?
Well, she's got an answer.
You better believe it's a garment. Can you have a blanket out of shatnez?
No.
Why? No. It gives you warmth. You're wearing it. You don't put sleeves in. I mean, you don't put your hands into the sleeves. But if you have a poncho, you know, the poncho, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so women usually are the ones wearing the poncho, so they don't need tzitzis. But technically, if a man wears a poncho, or for that matter, if a man will wear a towel, right? A towel, it might be a shadow of tzitzis. These are all, I mean, we're not learning hilchos tzitzis now, but I'm just saying this. We'll learn later when we get to, when more to the Pasuk of Isa Mesa, we'll discuss about night. So even that is a big machlekes in Pasuk. What does it mean that night is not the time of tzitzis? What?
Well, and I was going to ask you the other question is, when you say night for tzitzis, are you talking about a Jewish daytime, nighttime, like how you divide up the
and not
the literal light and dark? No, because I know that the Jewish day divides up...
Sunrise to sundown is day. Sundown to dawn or sunrise is night.
Okay. For certain things, you
now the question is in based on the Gemara, but it's a machlekes in the Rishonim of the Gemara in Menachos. Does day and night mean a day garment versus a night garment, or does it mean day and night period? Okay. In other words, to give you a simple example, a blanket is a night garment, correct?
Right.
Now, so some poskim write, even if you wear the blanket during the day, because it's a night garment, even during the day you wouldn't need tzitzis. Understand? And other opinions say, it doesn't matter. If you wear a blanket during the day, you need tzitzis, because day needs tzitzis. Night doesn't need tzitzis. It doesn't matter if it's a night garment day or day garment at night. Day needs tzitzis. Night. It's a big machlekes in the Rishonim.
Some people do it. Some people put tzitzis on their blankets.
I've seen people that cut the corners of the blankets.
They
do it in yeshiva usually. What?
Right. Also, you say it's a garment that most people wear a blanket at night.
Right.
Wouldn't it be? I mean, also like. People, like,
the
tzitzis that we wear, I'm not saying...
Again, when we're not...
I know, because I'm saying we go into the street, it's normal. But people don't go into the street with blankets on...
So what? Again, are you allowed to have a blanket from Shatnez?
No.
No. Do you know that you're not allowed to even sit on a chair? If this chair is made out of material that has Shatnez in it, you're not allowed to sit on that chair.
What if you're trying something out in the store?
That's a different story. Understand? If you even sitting on a chair is called a garment, because the chair is giving you warmth. And that would be a garment to the extent when the Torah says Leisil b'shatneis, that you're not allowed to wear wool and linen together, that would include sitting on a chair and in whatchamacallit. In Europe, there's a lot of stories about Gedolim. The normal carriages, the horse and buggies then, a lot of the seats of the carriages would have shatnez. And many people would stand, they would bring their own carriage, they have their own carriages with custom-made seats. And there's a lot of stories told about the gedolim of the previous generation in Europe with the horse and buggy. One time, I don't know how many of you know baseball, but many years ago, you know the baseball gloves? You know the baseball gloves?
Mm-hmm.
There was one Wilson baseball gloves, he found shotness in it. It became a whole commotion, a ganze tumult. You can't wear the glove because there's shotness in the... It was a tumult for about 2 weeks and then it straightened out.
So at the end...
So coming back to the point that we're learning, so one of the reasons why women don't wear... tzitzis, even though they might do all the other mitzvahs that they're not obligated to do. And tefillin b'chlal, tefillin are so holy, if you're not obligated in them, you're not allowed to wear them. That's why 10-year-old kids, 12-year-old kids do all the mitzvahs, but they don't wear tefillin until you're bar mitzvah. Why? Because tefillin are so holy that that if you're not obligated in it, halacha says you're not allowed to wear it because you don't have proper thoughts and proper body, and, you know, whatever it is. Not nowadays. 200 years ago, people that learned Torah the whole day would wear tefillin the whole day. Today, you have maybe in Eretz Yisrael very, very few. But
the women are not part of Bnei Yisrael.
They are.
Hashem commands Daber Bnei Yisrael. So
Bnei Yisrael means men and women.
So the women.
Yeah, but the reason they're not obligated in it is because it's connected to time. And we learn out from other psukim that any mitzvah connected to time, women are not obligated to do. Bnei Yisrael, generally speaking, in Hebrew, in grammar of Hebrew, okay, when you speak to men and women together, you use the plural in the masculine gender. Okay? So when the Torah says, right, you speak Lashon Zohar when you speak to the men and women together. So, when the Torah says, Dabel B'nai Yisrael, see, remember, we learned in Parshas Emor, the Torah says, Emor alakeinim B'nai Aharein. And over there, the Gemara says, B'nai and not daughters. They're about becoming Tomei. You know, a Bas Kain could go to a cemetery, because it says B'nai and not B'nai. When the Torah says B'nai Yisrael, it does not necessarily exclude women, or does not necessarily include women. Every mitzvah is different. And they're speaking collectively, speak to the Bnei Yisrael.
So Torah speaks in Lashon Zohar?
Torah speaks usually Lashon Zohar, unless the Torah is speaking directly, clearly to the women. What?
Are women obligated to eat matzah?
Yeah. But that's for a different reason. The Gemara asks, if women are, it's a mitzvah connected to time, why are women obligated? Because it says in the same pasuk, don't eat chametz, eat matzah. In the same pasuk. So therefore, the Gemara learned out that whoever is obligated in the negative, which women are obligated in all the negative commandments, right? If you're obligated in the negative of not eating chametz, then you're obligated in the positive of eating matzah. Same thing with Kiddush. Women are obligated in Kiddush, Friday night, and Shabbos day. Why? It's a mitzvah connected to time. Because Zohar v'shamar. Shamar is not to transgress the negative commandments. Zohar is the positive mitzvah of Kiddush. So the Gemara learns out, whoever has to keep Shamar has to keep Zohar. But those are exceptional cases, because over there the Torah explicitly includes women. But in case where the Torah doesn't include women and is connected to time, women are not obligated in it.
Avdalah.
Huh?
Avdalah.
Avdalah is a machlekes, but the halacha is that they need to hear Avdalah.
But it's not this woman, not connected to
that. Because the question is, Zohar, does it mean beginning and end? Does it only mean beginning? What?
So if Chas v'Shalom, a woman desecrates Shabbos, she will get stoned too?
Yep.
She what?
She gets stoned.
Yeah, what do you think? Women are different? All of a sudden, women want to be different.
I wasn't saying what.
No, the women would get stoned. The only difference is, when men got stoned, they just wore their pants and nothing else. Women were completely covered because of its tzinias. But yeah, the same punishment goes for men and women.
They killed very, very few people.
Who?
At this time. It was very, very, very few people.
The Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, there's two opinions, in fact. There's three opinions in the Mishnah. One opinion says, a Bez that killed somebody once in 7 years was called a killing Bezdin.
Killing
a killing Bezdin. They killed a lot. Once in 7 years. Another opinion says once in 70 years. That a Bezdin that killed somebody once in 70 years, they were called a killing Bezdin. The Mishnah said, Rabbi Kiva said, if I would be in the Bezdin, nobody would ever get killed. Because it would make the witnesses so crazy, they wouldn't know what they're talking about. So they said to Rabbi Kiva, because of you, there's a lot of murderers. But the halach is, in Rambam Paskins, that it's once in 7 years. If a Bezdin killed somebody once in 7 years, they were called a killing Bezdin. Because you have to understand, in order to kill somebody, like the Mekesh Sheitzim, yeah? It has to be Teich Kedei Dibur. You have to tell the guy, right? He's about to desecrate Shabbos or kill somebody. You need two witnesses that are not related to each other. The witnesses need to see each other. the whole Gemara about the, you know, the witness, and they had to tell the guy right before it the sin and the punishment, and right away the guy did it. How often did that happen? They would tell him, you're going to get killed. And there was a Beis Din. You know, it wasn't the Yukelsville. There was a Beis Din. And the guy didn't do it. It's like, in the olden times, if you sinned, you had to bring a carbon. People didn't sin. It cost a lot of money. If you had to pay $300 every time you sinned, people wouldn't be sinning so much.